You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
You are listening to Fanboy Versus. Welcome. This week, it's Fanboy Versus the Secret Avengers.
Oh, no.
Just the Avengers.
No, no. Led by Steve Rogers, not Captain America. So that'll be exciting. Obviously, we will be talking about that. We're going to be talking about what we normally talk about, really, the comics that we read this week, because that is what you are here for. We are Enderless this week. He has been called away to the moon, Titan.
What's he doing there?
You know, battling with other gods.
Okay.
Yeah, he does that. News this week. Do we have any news this week, McFeely? I don't know.
I didn't have any news either until 5 minutes ago when Triplett was filling me in. So Triplett,
yeah.
What's the news?
Green Lantern animated series was announced for Cartoon Network.
Meh.
Yay.
Meh.
Yeah.
Shut up.
I suck at the meh.
Come on.
In favor of that. I'm on your
I don't know. It depends on what they do with it. But it's still a little bit like, oh yeah, we're doing a movie next year. Maybe we should do a series.
Yeah, there is that.
I don't know. I don't see it having legs.
As long as it's got the Green Lantern core in it and they do some awesome sci-fi space stuff, I'm happy. Even if it fails.
I couldn't care less.
I think Green Lantern is not grounded enough to appeal to the wider audience, which is why I'm amazed they're doing a film of it. Obviously I love Green Lantern. I'm a huge Green Lantern fan. I don't think it's very consumable. And I don't think that Green Lantern would do well outside of a Justice League style show. You know, I don't think he can carry his own show. But who knows?
John Stewart's the only Green Lantern that anyone really cares about outside of comics.
And that's true. You wouldn't believe the number of people that I hear come in and point to something with the Green Lantern on it and go, is he not supposed to be black?
Yeah,
because that's how the Green Lantern they know from the cartoon.
I mean, you know, admittedly, John Stewart from the comics sucks, but John Stewart from Justice League is awesome. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's way cooler.
He's infinitely cool.
So there you go. Nothing out of actual comics, though. I mean, we're kind of at a dead point now.
No, it seems to be extra media news. Runaways has a screenwriter. Yeah, who is it? It's Drew Pearce.
Wow.
Best known as the creator of No Heroics, a 2008 British comedy series, which you guys have never heard of.
Exactly.
Yeah, but so. I'll believe that whenever, you know, it's on the screen in front of me, but I'm looking forward to it because I'm a big runner.
If it was the screenwriter Father Ted, it would be so much better.
What did we also get? We also got an official synopsis, a supposedly official synopsis released for the Green Lantern movie.
Okay.
I can read that out if you want, because it's in front of me here.
Betting it's not Emerald Dawn.
Yeah, it's probably. Hopefully, it's not Emerald Dawn.
I don't know. I mean, I only read Emerald Dawn like comparatively recently, but it seems like a very solid thing to base a first movie on. If you change the body from that weird yellow thing into
Hector
Hammond, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the summary is as follows. In a universe as vast as it is mysterious, a small but powerful force has existed for centuries. Protectors of peace and justice, they are called the Green Lantern Corps, a brotherhood of warriors sworn to keep intergalactic order. Each Green Lantern wears a ring that grants him superpowers. But when a new enemy called Parallax threatens to destroy the balance of power in the universe, their fate and the fate of Earth lie in the hands of their newest recruit, the first human ever selected, Hal Jordan. Hal is a gifted and cocky test pilot, but the Green Lanterns have little respect for humans who have never harnessed the infinite powers of the ring before. But Hal is clearly missing the missing piece to the puzzle, and along with his determination and willpower, he has one thing to He has one thing no member of the Corps has ever had: humanity. With the encouragement of fellow pilot and childhood sweetheart Carol Ferris, if Hal can quickly master his new powers and find the courage to overcome his fears, he may prove to not only be the key to defeating Parallax, he will become the greatest Green Lantern of all.
Wow.
Right. Going straight for Parallax, that's...
That's curious, yes.
Ding. Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
That's interesting.
The question becomes, you know, what way are they playing Parallax?
And how legit is this? Where is this from?
This has come from, hang on, let me just reach back, tracing it. Comicbookmovie.com.
So, do we want to see a giant yellow bug, or do we want to see someone harnessing the power of a giant yellow bug?
I want a big yellow bug.
I think they're probably going to go the route that Hector Hammond might wind up being host to his power or something. Because we know Hector Hammond is definitely the villain in this, and there have been some leaked shots of
right.
Who's the actor that plays Harold Hector Hammond? Peter Sarsgaard in the makeup.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly.
So, Well, I mean, the larger cast here than I knew had been confirmed. Ryan Reynolds as Hal Jordan, we knew that. Blake Lively as Carol Ferris, Peter Sarsgaard as Hector Hammond, Mark Strong as Sinestro, J.O. Sanders as, that's Mark Strong of Sherlock Holmes most recently.
Yeah.
The villain, Sherlock Holmes, as Sinestro. J.O. Sanders as Carl Ferris, Temuera Morrison, that's Jango Fett, as Abin Sur.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Taika Waititi as Tom Kalmaku. Angela Bassett as Amanda Waller, and Tim Robbins as Hector's father, Robert.
Amanda Waller, great. Yeah.
So I'm assuming this is not fat Amanda Waller yet.
Oh.
Or is she fat now? I don't know. I may have just insulted her.
Well, wow. I'm looking up the actress.
Nice. Well, that doesn't sound... Because there's no mention of... Okay. I don't know. I'm going to take that with a grain of salt. Just sort of... I mean, obviously, parts of it are going to be there, but the Parallax, I'm a bit...
Yeah,
that's from comicbookmovie.com, anyway.
Well, but where did they get it, though?
I'm checking it.
Okay.
Rumors began circulating. This has been released to several internet news outlets. The alleged source of this information was Allied Integrated Marketing, a company which handles promotions, publicity, and advertising for many major movie studios. The blogger notes, for various reasons, I was hesitant to relay this until confirmation of its validity could be ensured. Today I was contacted by a member of LAIM who not only forwarded me a copy of the press release, but was kind enough to confirm its origin. A one page created and disseminated by our office on behalf of Time Warner.
Hmm. Okie dokie.
It says here.
Well, there you go. Okay. Awesome. Well, there you go. So.
That's about it for the news, though.
Excellent. Lots of Green Lantern-y stuff. And hey, there's some Green Lantern-y stuff that happened this week, too, so that's exciting.
It sure is.
We'll talk about that. So let's get to it. Brian, what'd you read this week?
I read Secret Avengers number 1, but we'll get to that here in a few minutes. I read Amazing Spider-Man 633, which I enjoyed, but I'm torn on. In the pre-show talk, McFeely and I were talking. I kind of regret that they killed Kirk Connors, killed his son, Billy.
But he killed him. Adam.
He ate him.
Well, that's all of him.
He got in his belly. I'm sorry.
But as McFeely pointed out,
God.
We can no longer do that one, you know, wizard story over and over.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really horrible. And it's like the worst thing you could really conceivably have the lizard do, but that kid has been the undoing of every lizard story ever.
Ever.
You know, that one lizard story that they keep telling. So now it's like you can never tell that lizard story again. So you could finally... I mean, when was the last time the lizard actually appeared? Because the lizard's like really died off in stories since like the 90s, really, when they did that story about the monster lizard. There was one that didn't. Who was the writer? Was Paul Jenkins was writing Spectacular Spider-Man a while back?
He did.
He did some sort of lizard story there, and that was like
that's been a long time ago.
That was years ago, and I think that was the last lizard story.
That was like 2002, 2001.
I mean, they got into the thing where they were just avoiding all of Spidey's old villains. They were trying to make new villains.
That's been the directive off and on for 20 years. You know, redo Spider-Man's characters. I mean, not redo them, but create new ones. And it really got into high gear when JMS was doing the comic. But there's no reason to recreate, you know, or do a new cast because Spider-Man's villains are pretty awesome.
Well, they started out, you know, Brand New Day trying to fall into the trap of bringing the old villains back. But there was a very concentrated effort to do something new first and, you know, pave the way for the return of the villains.
That did a great job, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I like the some of those, I mean, just kind of kooky villains, like, you know, the parkour woman and and the shadowy person woman or something. I think that was her name. I mean, that's okay. I mean, you start with that, and then you start going back to his old villains and doing what they're doing now. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it worked.
They told some really, really good stories with the villains they've brought back. The Gauntlet has been pretty solid from the outset.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We talked last week about how great the Rhino was.
Yeah, that was the Rhino story was really, really fun. Looks like they're building toward something. Obviously, they're building something with Kraven, so that will be interesting.
There Kraven's is daughter in it.
Yeah.
Coming up that has something to do with the Kravens, but I'm not clear on the details. I think it's the Kravens, and then it leads in, and then after that, it's this one moment in time thing. So it's the next couple of months, it's this Kraven. Yes. This one moment in time thing is this Kraven thing is before the end of the summer, anyway.
Let's see here. I also read the Ultimate Avengers 2, number 2. It's crap. Basically, it's like every other Ultimate comic or Ultimate Avengers / Ultimates comic when they introduce a new character. He is the bigger,
Mark Miller.
Yeah, he's the bigger, badder, tougher, meaner brother, cousin, uncle, teacher of an Ultimates character. And this time it's the bigger, blacker, tougher teacher of Bruce Banner, who I honestly through 2/3 of the issue thought was Luke Cage. But he ended up fighting Rhodey, which was kind of cool to see War Machine, you know, running around big and tough. It's kind of crap. But as McFeely pointed out, the last spread featured Ultimate Ghost Rider, so that will be kind of cool.
Did you get to see him? I mean, do you get to see Ghost Rider, or is it just hinted
just
at
full
it?
On, just
at
full it? On, two-page spread, one caption box. Ghost Rider.
And it makes me really want to read, because I never actually got around to reading it, Ghost Rider 2099. I don't know why, but I just have the sense to read that. Can't help myself, but I really need to.
Hey, the artist that did that, was it the same artist that did that new issue of Amazing Spider-Man? Was it Chris Bacciolo?
That did what?
Did Ghost Rider 2099.
I don't know.
Was it?
I don't know. I can't remember. I remember that the art is kind of similar, but this, keep in mind, this is like, what, 15 years ago or something? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm old.
It has been that long.
It's bad. It wasn't that great, and there's really nothing to get in.
Yeah, Chris Bucklow worked on it.
Woohoo! Memory's still good. I'm not old.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Wow.
I'll let someone else jump on to Return of Bruce Wayne number 2. I know everyone read that. I did read after reading, though. I'll say this: after reading Ultimate Avengers 2 number 2, I said that has to be the worst comic out there. And I found a comic browsing through Usenet I was just trying to find something worse, and I think I did. It was WWE Comics number 3. So just wanted to mention how bad this is. I don't know who in the WWE okayed this.
Jim Ross.
It's about a terrorist who takes control or hijacks WrestleMania has a bomb and is going to kill everyone there, and does actually end up killing some of the wrestlers. So he's like an evil priest who's worshiping Satan. It's kind of awesome and awful all at the same time. Or as a friend of mine said, it's wrong and awesome, so it's wrongsome. So yeah, it's really wrongsome. But I think it managed to outdo Ultimate Avengers 2 number 2, which was pretty freaking awful.
That just keeps it all in perspective, doesn't it? Yeah.
And I also caught up on, except for the last two issues, I've been catching up on Detective Comics because I really wanted to finish the Batwoman stuff that Greg Rucka did. And because he'll never go back to it again, or at least no time soon, it's kind of like now, you know, crystallized in a little glass bottle forever, this near perfection that was the Batwoman Detective Comics run. I told Chris Triplett today, screw Batman. I want an ongoing Detective Comics run with Batwoman.
But you're getting it. It's just Greg Rucka's not running it.
No. I don't care if it's not Greg Rucka. Sorry.
We get J.H. Williams III. Is that his name?
God, his art was amazing.
Yeah, his art is fantastic. I can agree on that.
Throughout the whole run, it was just, they can do that in comics. Oh, my God. It was awesome.
Well, I've got the hardcover collection pre-ordered for the end of the month, so I'll be enjoying it properly. Well, to be honest, I probably won't get reading it for months after the fact. But I have a stack of trade paperbacks and hardcovers that I'm slowly working through, and there's like another half dozen books coming out before that one does. I've moaned about this big trade month before. So,
As a comic fan, I have to say, getting behind on things, there was a period, and I'm certain Triplett's there now, where he has long boxes full of stuff that he needs to get to.
And oh, God, yeah.
It's arduous, and it's not fun. And when you get to that point, you're like, I'm not having fun at this. I'm not enjoying it. Why am I doing it? And
exactly. So I ask myself that question every day.
So I'm trying
to... Well, I can honestly say that that hasn't happened to me yet. I always get my comics of a week read in a day or three. And it's just because the hardcovers sit by my bed and I read them at night. So I only read a couple of issues a night. So whenever you're reading, for instance, as I am right now, the Secret Wars 2 omnibus with its 45 comics in one book, that's a couple of weeks of reading.
Yeah, and it's not like, you're so far behind that you're just now getting up to Secret Wars 2 number 2, or Secret Wars number 2.
No, it's not that I'm 25 years behind. Yeah. No.
Rarely has that really been enjoyable, though occasionally I lucked out and was able to read all of Dan Jurgens' run on the last half of Dan Jurgens' run on Thor, so like 30 issues. One setting, and that was enjoyable, but typically...
It can be fun, like if you get behind and just reading just an entire run, if it's awesome. But I'm really dreading reading Action Comics and Superman because I haven't read it in like a year.
Yeah, it's like, if you get behind because you actively find that you don't want to read the thing and you just leave it, that's bad. But I've got a customer, for instance, who's very behind on his Secret Warriors and his Agents of Atlas and his Secret Six. And he's recently blitzed his way through the Secret Warriors and the Secret Six, and he just recently finished the original Agents of Atlas miniseries. And he just keeps coming into me and telling me how brilliant everything is. And that's good. It's like, wow, why did I leave it so long to actually read this?
But, when you have, like, I read, like, 16 issues of Amazing Spider-Man over the last month. That was fun. And reading the last eight or nine issues of Detective Comics over the weekend's been great, so... occasionally it's great, but if it's like I'm, five issues in and I hate it, I'm just going to count that a loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I would too. Because you would probably have stopped getting it if you'd actually read it at the time. So
right.
You wouldn't be missing anything you wouldn't have read if you had not read it after you'd read. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The train got a little lost along the way there. Sorry.
Got away from you.
That's back.
Excellent. Okay. Triplett.
I read a lot of stuff this week. Do we want to talk about Avengers number 1? We didn't really talk about it last week.
I think yes. I think so.
I mean, I think we should.
Well, okay.
So who read it?
I think this should be versus Avengers, not versus Secret Avengers, because we still have Avengers number 1.
Just Avengers. Okay. Very good. We'll just pretend that's the way it always
versus too many Avengers books, because there's going to be too many coming out in the next couple of weeks.
There's no
in a
more
Joe
coming
Quesada
out.
Move, we'll pretend that I made a deal with with the devil.
Well, I'm saying that it's too many Avengers books because I kind of want to get them all, and that's why it's too many Avengers books.
Well, I was getting them all already, so.
Well, I wasn't. I was like, ah. So, Avengers number one. So, like, everybody's read it, right? Brian, you read it?
For the most part.
Okay. Okay, so, like, at the beginning, obviously we're in the future at the beginning of the issue. These characters, correct me if I'm wrong, but are they the characters that was in that animated movie that came out?
They surely are.
That's kind of awesome.
It is.
I mean, I never saw that movie. I still want to see it. I just haven't got around to it. But now they're kind of tying in that animated universe into the Avengers comic as a possible future timeline, and whatever they have done in the future is now affecting the Avengers in the past, and they're going to have to fix the problems of their sons and daughters in the future. I think that's an awesome way to begin this series, and John Romita Jr.'s art's fantastic.
I knew from the first page that it was obvious Bendis was really trying to shoot to tell a more like classically cosmic Avengers story, because Immortus is in the first panel.
Yeah.
That's kind of your clue. I have some doubts as to whether or not he'll actually be able to accomplish it over the run of the story, but this is a very solid first issue.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Not a whole lot happens in this issue.
No,
I mean,
it's a lot of standing around and setting everything up. But.
And it's like, hey, I want you on the Avengers. Hey, I need you here. This is what's going on. This is going to be the Avengers team and all this. And then, boom, oh, my God, Kane shows up. Kane the Conqueror.
Yeah, he does. Fucking right. Kane turns up. That's right, babe. Which and then just... Thor shoots him in the face. Yeah, Kang just standing there, posturing and monologuing. I have traveled through the great reaches of time to bring you up.
I would have liked at least a...
Out the window, across the cityscape. Yeah, Thor's back.
I like that, but I would have just liked to heard just a nay or something. You know?
I say thee nay.
I say thee nay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, there's... Not much that goes on in the issue. There's basically Kane is threatening them with a weapon that can't exist because it only exists in the back of Tony Stark's mind, and he hasn't invented it yet.
But he will.
Something that terrifies him so badly that he says, oh, God, we can't beat him. We have to do what he says, basically.
I mean, it's mostly, it's the team coming together and then the setup for the first story with some, like, perfunctory action tossed in there. But I think it's pretty solid overall, you know. It does feel like a rather classic-y Avengers team. I do have to admit I'm wondering if Spidey and Wolverine are going to hang around beyond the first little while. Their presence makes it feel a little transition-y, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, sure. I don't care if they're there or not.
I'm beyond caring now. I've been conditioned over the last 7 years to accept them as Avengers worthy characters.
Now I think they're going to be on the new Avengers comic.
Yeah,
aren't they on that?
New Avengers. That's what makes me wonder if they're going to be around here for much longer.
They were just probably at the meeting room where, like, you know, Steve's like, okay, you guys need to go here and you guys need to do this, and this person's going to tell you what to do. You know that they're at the Avengers board meeting, I guess is what it was. But
great to see that Hawkeye again now as well.
Yeah, oh thank God.
But I love the fact that they basically just give a panel and a half to it. It's like it's such a non-issue that Clint Barton is Hawkeye again, because nobody ever actually stopped thinking of Clint Barton as Hawkeye. So he's just wearing the costume again, and life goes on.
Yeah, I like to. I mean, I know that a lot of people really enjoyed New Avengers and what was going on before and thought it was awesome stuff, but maybe I offend people by saying this, but I like to pretend all of that never happened and that I'm kind of starting over now.
Well, I mean, you can, basically.
I mean, that's basically how they wrote it.
If you choose, yeah.
And then, like, at the end of the issue, we find out that Kane's actually not the big threat. The threat's the Maestro, isn't it? I mean, that's got to be him.
Well,
then,
right? It's an evil future Hulk, anyway. There was a future bearded, white-haired Hulk in the movie, so that's.
That's right. So that's
not so much this Spider Girl character that's hanging around with him, but yeah, he was in there too. But he wasn't a bad guy. They needed his help to beat Ultron, and Ultron was the baddie of the film. He's only mentioned in passing in Kang's exposition in this, but he was the baddie in the film, and they needed the Hulk's help to beat him.
So I need to see that movie.
It's a decent movie. It's one of the better Marvel ones, I think.
I've always heard that it was the best, but I never saw it. For some reason, I always saw the others,
Planet
but I never saw that one.
Surpassed it at this point.
Yeah, I really like Planet Hulk, but it seems like prior to that, everybody was saying that it was the best animated movie that Marvel had at that point. But that was Avengers in a nutshell. I liked it. Looking forward to the next issue. Good first start.
There's this oral history feature in the back as well.
Yeah.
Trying to justify the $4, which isn't bad. Give me a few chuckles.
Got that art by Arthur, that little picture by Arthur Adams. That's beautiful. I'd love to have that as a poster.
That is gorgeous. But then that's Art Adams. So. Yeah, the oral history, for anybody who didn't read the issue, is... it's just the story of the Avengers, starting from Avengers number one, as told by the characters who were there through prose. And I'm not sure about the legs of the thing, but I got a few genuine chuckles out of it. You know, it's, you know, playing with the dated nature of some of the material and the odd way some of the characters behaved in the original story. You know, where Wade Richards basically told Rick Jones to go and swing. When they were trying to get their help to stop the Hulk, and then they got Reed's perspective of it. I don't recall this exactly as Mr. Jones is telling it. I must have been up to my neck and other concerns. Stuff like that.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, Wonder Man says no. Yes. He doesn't want to join the Avengers. So in the next issue, it looks like he's actually going to fight him or something. The cover kind of gives the indication he's trying to stop him or something.
Wonder Man attacks, mark, !!
And that kind of throws you back to, like, you know, his first appearance. He was a villain, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Subplots. Do you remember those? We used to have them in comics.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that bugs me, it's got to be the fact that Bendis seems to believe that there's merit to Maria Hill and has brought her back.
Yeah, I don't care that she's there. I can do without
her. He seems interested in giving every team a liaison, basically. You've got Sharon Carter, as we'll see in the Secret Avengers, is their liaison. We've got Maria Hill is the main Avengers team's liaison. And Victoria Hand has some sort of role as well. We haven't seen it yet, but I'm assuming that'll be the new Avengers or possibly the Academy or something.
Best part in Avengers number one when Bucky Cap says hey to Thor, and Thor says, I'm sorry. And he says, no, I was just saying hey. And Thor says, I'm sorry, I'm not entirely sure who you are. Yeah.
Well, Thor's been dead for as long as Bucky's been alive. So,
all the readers agreed with Thor in just one tiny panel. Fantastic.
Hmm.
Well, maybe not
these
all.
Buckers.
Okay. I've also read War of Superman 3 and 4.
You're a better man than I am.
I don't know if anybody's read those.
No.
Yeah.
We could probably save Return of Bruce Wayne for later. I'm assuming everybody read it. What about the two Green Lantern books? Did everybody get a chance to read those?
Yeah, I read those.
I'll save those for you, JD. You can talk.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. That's awful nice of you.
Yeah.
do you want to talk Bruce Wayne now then?
Go talk about, take Bruce Wayne and then I'll go on Core and then we'll move from there.
So
go with Bruce Wayne.
Which Green Lantern issues did I miss?
Core Green Lantern, 48 and 54.
Yeah. I think they both came out this week. Yeah. Same week, didn't they?
I don't read.
Yes, yes.
But I do read Green Lantern. Didn't know that. Missed it, but that's okay. I really don't care.
That's all right.
There's nothing really to spoil at this point that I could care about.
Nah.
So Return of Bruce Wayne, number two. What did everybody think?
Yeah, I enjoyed
it. Yeah, it was it's similar to the first in that you're sort of thrust into a story where you're not really sure what the hell's going on, but you know.
Yeah, but you're like in the same boat as Batman. I don't think Batman knows what the hell's going on either.
Basically, yeah.
I really like the art in it, though. I think the art's...
It's different.
It was Fraser Irving did this one, wasn't he?
Fraser Irving, yeah. I don't know. I don't think I've read anything he's done before.
It's a very unsettling style, which I like. And
it's
it works just, well for the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was pretty happy with the book. Like I was saying before the broadcast, I would totally buy a Batman book that takes place in Puritan times where he solves mysteries and says, and people says that it's the devil, and he says, no, it was the good wife, blah, 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 that murdered her husband. He could do that every issue, and I would continue to buy it.
It'd be like a Batman meets Murder, She Wrote, meets Little House on the Prairie.
Meets The Scarlet Letter.
The Scarlet Letter. Oh, God.
We didn't want to read that in high school. Why do we want to read that now?
Oh, yeah.
I still don't know what the heck is going on in this comic. I mean...
There was a little bit of Morrison weirdness settling in towards the end of it there.
Yeah.
Batman is also in the future, and he's disguised as a robot at the end of time, and he's going to shoot the 21st century.
He doesn't want them to find him or something? Is that what it is? He's doing something?
I don't know. It's definitely not making any sense. And I'm hoping it's not making sense because it's going to make sense and not just not making sense.
And see, that was like Final Crisis when it made no sense and we were hoping that last issue would make all the sense and it didn't make any sense. I think we're setting ourselves up for a lot of heartache.
Well, I'm confused, I guess, too, as far as where this is happening timeline-wise to the present DC Universe.
A little after where we are now, basically.
Okay, and that's what I'm wanting to make sure.
I mean, it's got to be after Blackest Night, because that's the point when they know that Bruce is lost in time. That's all we really know at this point.
Well, and it certainly
we haven't had another Batman and Robin, basically. We need to see what the next issue of Batman and Robin is doing, and we'll maybe get a better idea for where it falls. Of course, we got the Masters miniseries coming up in a month or two, which seems like it's going to tell the story of how they set off after him. So, obviously, it's not happening until after
that. Based on what's happening in Generation Lost, though, it's probably not happening.
Yeah, it's like Booster doesn't really have time to go off and do that right now.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that him and Supes aren't on good terms right now, but I'll get to that in a minute. I'll talk about Generation.
You know, don't you miss like little citations in the comic that explains that? Oh yeah, this takes place after Booster Gold number yada yada when he was like eating a sandwich or something.
All I really understand is Bruce is trying to destroy the present. And he's being attacked by a giant squid starfish thing through time.
Well, that's just a monster that the witch summoned up.
But that was in the previous issue, too, remember?
Yeah, the implication was that she'd summoned it up and it's been hanging around since then.
Caveman time?
No, well, it came splooshing out of the water after he got teleported.
Yeah, he like fell through like time or something, then he wound up, you know, there, and the first thing he's doing is he's fighting a monster.
You know? But see, that was at the end of the previous issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but he fell through the waterfall and appeared in Puritan times at the end of the previous issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like how at the end of this issue he's like, you know, looking at Blackbeard and, you know, he's about to fight some pirates.
Pirates.
Yeah.
Arr.
Maybe he'll meet Ben Grimm. That'd be nice.
Oh.
Sweet.
Okay, well,
my question is like, what's making him bounce through time? I mean, he's just just randomly bouncing through time, or what? He jumps, falls into the water, and now he's here.
It's God.
It's God.
Dark Side did it.
It's some guy behind a bar.
Yeah, exactly. The point. And
hoping that each leap will be his leap home.
That's what obviously he has his detective skills and everything, but he doesn't seem to have a clue what's going on. So it's kind of like,
well, he's lost his memory. So
yeah, so just like in Quantum Leap, you know, Sam has some clue of who he is with every episode, but he doesn't know exactly who.
So in the next issue, will Booster Gold be the Dean Stockwell, and they'll find him, and like he'll only be like a transmission of him, and he's trying to,
that would be excellent.
Tell him what he needs to do in pirate time so he can leap to the next time.
I would buy every issue of that. Bruce, you gotta. Oh damn.
You can't tell him he's got a wife.
Oh,
or he won't do the stuff he does.
You have to make him forget it. Oh, jeez. Wow.
He doesn't have a...
So apparently in this issue of Fanboy Versus, we also try to make suggestions for how to turn current comic book series into pre-existing television serials. It's all good times.
You could put an Airwolf.
Yeah.
Oh, if only. Oh, yes. Yes. Bring on the Airwolf. We'll save that for like the Marvel universe with like Nick Fury. Oh, but I digress. So yeah, hopefully it'll all make sense, cuz it sure as hell is not making sense right now. So, Generation Lost, I'll go ahead. Generation Lost, So, when we Generation last... Lost. Yes?
Yes,
no, it's waiting for you. I know. It's too exciting. This is wacky, basically. So, when we last left, the world had completely forgotten who Max Lord was, except for four of our heroes, Booster, Captain Atom, Ice, and Fire. So, and of which, not only that, but it's actually worse than they thought, where Max sort of went through and for each one of them did something to them in everyone's mind, or did something to them upcoming. So, for example, he made Captain Atom, you know, beat the crap out of a general, casted like an illusion and into his mind, and so now he's on the outs, and then put Fire on the outs with Checkmate, and put Ice on the outs with guys. But who cares? But anyway, the really sad and awesome part is he didn't do anything to Booster.
Oh.
with the implication being that Booster's life is already so pathetic that he didn't really have to do anything to him specifically. The only thing that really happened that has Booster fired up is that he changed the story, because obviously Max had killed Ted, that Ted killed himself, and that really pissed Booster off. He certainly doesn't like the idea of the world thinking that Ted killed himself. But it's really even weirder because they try to show a video of Wonder Woman killing Max Lord, and Superman doesn't see that on the video. He sees Wonder Woman holding a sword or something.
So they got implanted some sort of thing. He implanted something in their minds to make them see different
things. Yeah, basically, okay. whenever they see something that would, you know, tip them off to who he was or whatever, they see something else completely different.
Ooh.
So, yeah, and yeah, it's hilarious, which is great because the four of them are going around to, you know, different people in the DC world and saying, "No, you remember Max and Max Lord did all this stuff." And they're like, okay, no, we have no idea who that is. And you four are the only ones that remember. And we're the ones that don't. Right.
But if Bruce was still alive, he'd have this all fixed up.
Yep. But
He'd remember. He'd have kept a backup of his own brain that remembered.
Yeah, yes. In the back computer.
Also, he'd probably noticed that there was like this huge swathe of files from the bat computer that he just suddenly couldn't freaking read anymore. Dick.
Yeah. And hey, at the end, the new Blue Beetle shows up.
Well, it's nice that they're finding something for him to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's been like shelved for the last several months because they had been doing those the second third of an issue with him with Booster, and that was cut like 6 months ago.
Well, not that long.
Has it been? No, not that long.
Oh, I hope it's
been that long. It was really worthless. Anyway, so now Blue Beetle is here and fighting Omax, apparently. But whatever. So anyway, it's kind of interesting, and that's why I say there's a question of when this is happening within the other parts of the DC universe, because as far as like the Bruce Wayne thing goes on, obviously it's not during this period because they're not, I mean, I would assume it's not current for this, so it's got to be later.
I don't imagine we'll really see this affecting a lot of what else is going on in the universe.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, we know Booster's going to have some tie-ins to it, and Power Girl as well.
Yeah. So, meh.
But I don't see it doing too much outside of the universe itself. I mean, I'm just wondering how long DC is going to milk the Brightest Day banner on the cover.
Yeah.
I think we have at least up to 5 months. We have at least up to issue 5, I think, of The Flash solicited, and it's still wearing the banner, so...
God. Yeah, they're going to...
3 months would have done it there, guys. Please don't keep those banners on all year.
As a retailer, McFeely, is Brightest Day like a big seller for you? I mean, is that like bringing people into the shop?
Well, for me personally, the tie-ins are not selling... Well, actually, you know, to be fair, I'm selling like twice as many Birds of Prey as I figured I would. And
so you're
Brightest...
What, two?
No!
Oh.
The Brightest Day miniseries is a bit of mental calculation. Yeah, that's actually our second best-selling title after Return of Bruce Wayne right now. So, So people are interested. Mind you, Generation Lost is only selling half as many as Brightest Day.
Yeah, I couldn't even find the first issue. My comic shop didn't. I don't even know if they even got them in. They either sold out of them or didn't even order, which is weird.
On to things that are green, in particular Green Lantern Corps and Green Lantern. Two issues of that, both coming out in the same week, which is sort of odd, but we'll go with it. Start with Green Lantern Corps 48.
I read them out of order. I think I read Green Lantern before Corps, and I think I was supposed to read Corps first.
Yeah, I think it looks like Corps is first.
Yeah.
So... they've shown parts of this scene before. I think it was in Brightest Day 1. Mm-hmm. Where
it was Gans Zero, said, wasn't it?
Or Zero. I'm sorry. You're correct.
Yeah.
It was Zero.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's been a little bit. Basically, Guy Gardner and Ganthet show up to Atrocious? Is that how you say his name? I have no idea.
I think I've said Atrocitus, but...
Atrocitus? Okay.
Atrocitus sounds good. Yeah.
Anyway, they show up with him, and apparently they're making some deal with him that we can't be told what it is, but it's going to involve a lot of sacrifice, and for some reason, Hal and Guy will not be friends after this is done. Why that makes a difference and why that is, we don't know, because they did...
Because he's got to really... kill Carol Ferris, probably.
Probably.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No.
Who knows? But I'm slightly annoyed that they're doing the... listen very closely, and then 4 minutes later, and then going on with what happened, because it's just, I don't know. It's kind of crappy to me. It's sort of like, it would, because it doesn't even cut to anything. It just, you know, like if they would go do another short vignette to something else and then come back and be like, wow, that was, you know, whatever. But to just do 4 minutes later. So apparently whatever they're going to do takes 4 minutes to explain.
We're not supposed to know those 4 minutes.
But we're not supposed to know what happened within that 4 minutes. So, yeah. So otherwise, Ganthet not only becomes not a guardian, no longer the guardian for the Blue Lanterns, but he becomes a Green Lantern himself and forges his own ring, which was sort of badass.
That was kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. So now he's a full Green Lantern, and apparently something is going on with the Alpha Lanterns, but it's not like a good thing. I'm not.
They're taking people. Why are they taking
people? It's like they're taking them. Like
well, there's always going to be trouble with those, yeah.
Like they're being assimilated, which is sort of weird. So I don't know what's going on with that. But anyway, yeah, the whole discussion about rebuilding Oa in any way. Otherwise, it was pretty boring. But so we're not sure what's happening with the office, but apparently that's going to play into the story later. So now connecting back into Green Lantern 54, we show our favorite Red Lantern and Cat. Cat's hilarious.
What is that thing's actual name?
I don't know. They've done such a good job of doing the little what their name is and what their powers are thing.
Yeah, and but they don't give it for the cat. For the
his cat. Reins on his tail. That's awesome.
His name is Dexstar.
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 Yeah, his ring is on his tail. That is funny. So, and apparently he's attacking a train where there's people attacking other people on the train. So he's sort of a good guy. So anyway, we're back to the scene where Hal and Sinestro and Carol are standing around talking about the White Lantern that they've been trying to pick up. And we yet again bring up the Athorian mythos and explain it to Sinestro. So these are also things that have happened in other issues that they are showing again.
Brightest Day.
So they're showing things that happened previously again. Now, what's really wacky is when all three of them try to pick up the battery and they see images, visions of the resurrected, and they sort of move between the living versions of themselves and then back into like the Black Lantern versions of themselves. Something about the battery or the entity telling
them come back right. I'm sticking
find
with my wonderfully indistinct theory.
Yes. Well, and they mentioned something about finding them, but the implication is not finding them, those that were resurrected, but rather finding the
entity things, yeah.
Yes. And there are sort of images of where they might be, I guess, or
well, hints. We get the names of a lot of these things for the first time as well.
Yeah. Adra, Ophidian, the Predator, which we knew, the Butcher, I think we knew that.
Proselyte.
Proselyte, which is for the compassion. Yes, so.
And then Atrocitus is busy murdering people down in the subway, and he uses their blood like to call upon some higher power to show him a map of where the entities are, and they all seem to be very helpfully located in North America.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah, because that's where they would be. Yeah. Now, the other wacky thing is somebody shows up to Saddam Yat. Gets him out of the sun and says, hey, by the way, we need to borrow Ion. And so
presumably the same figure we saw in the last issue who claims to have written the Green Lantern Corps' oath and has Parallax captive at the minute as well.
Yes, and now has Ion as well.
I gotta say this, I think I said this last time, but it's like, after Blackest Night, you weren't really sure what could happen next with Green Lantern, but it's like, holy crap, he totally pulled out another really interesting place to take the idea that's still following on from everything he was doing.
So, and of course, the favorite part is when the people of Daxam start crashing to the Earth as their planet returns, as their sun returns to its sun. But, you know, in the original, in the first, I think it was issue zero, or zero again in Blackest Night, this figure, you know, this shrouded figure looked to be full size. I mean, there was no scale, obviously. But now they sort of have the very distinct size and shape of a guardian.
Of a guardian.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows?
Well, assuming logically, somebody, I suppose, a guardian probably would have been responsible for writing the Green Lantern Oath.
Yeah. So that just makes sense. It didn't seem like that was the connection last time, and now it is.
No,
so.
No.
But yeah, and yes. So we have a Red Lantern. Now making avatars or constructs. I'm sorry, constructs.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. But and then we're just gonna throw in Lobo because why not?
Yeah, that was really weird.
I got to the last panel and I'm like, what the hell?
I mean, you can't really say it's a bad thing, but it is very left field.
It's so left field. Like, what?
Why not?
It's just random. Random.
Wow. What's the emphasis on the dumb?
On the dumb, maybe? I don't know.
See, it's going to be he's going to know where one of the entities are, and they're going to have to give him something he wants so he can tell them that. That's probably what it's going to be.
But the label for the next issue is Lobo punches people with rings
hard.
Wow.
Why?
You don't care.
So, yes. So anyway, I think my concern is that about half of both of these issues were things that had already happened. They're just told again, which I guess if you hadn't read the other issues,
you wouldn't
know that. Look at
them. They're all expanded from the way they were told before.
Yeah.
Half is a bit of an exaggeration.
We get to see what happened in Brightest Day, but then we get to see beyond the snippet that we got in Brightest Day within
the regular
books. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. I ain't got no problem with that.
Yeah. This thing
I don't think we'll be seeing too much of that as well. I think that pretty much it's just a guess on my part, but I think that Green Lantern and the White Lantern's role in the Brightest Day maxi series itself is probably done for the most part now. Probably just going to focus on like those six dead guys.
Yeah.
And then the White Lantern thing will be dealt with over in Green Lantern itself. I think. I hope, yeah. Really. I have to say, I hope. I don't want another countdown wherever everything's so busy trying to be involved with everything that's going on around it that the whole story just gets lost.
Well, and especially after we just got done with Blackest Night, it's like we got to. I need time to like. Center. Yeah,
I hope based on the second issue, I think we're probably headed in the right direction there.
I hope so. So anyway, so there you go.
All right. What did I read? A couple of things I'm not going to bother talking about. Power Girl. As far as I'm concerned, this is the last issue of Power Girl. Because it's the last issue with the Gray Palmiotti Connor team on it, and that's it for me. It's not that I don't like Power Girl, but I've decided I don't want to read this comic without this creative team on it. So this is it for Power Girl for me, but it's a nice story that ends the run. She's still in Terra's, as the story begins, she's still in Terra's subterranean civilization. And, you know, to be honest, it's a low-key final issue. She meets their parents, Dr. Savannah throws Satana out a window. Then she goes back to the surface and feeds her cat. Vartox from a couple of issues ago pops back up. There's a little bit of a fight. Then everybody says goodbye and everything turns out happy and there's cake.
All right.
So it's a very nice, low-key, a little bit of perfunctory action in the middle that just sums up the nature of the whole run. I've said it before, I mean, I don't think the ride really hit its stride until maybe about a third of the way in or so, when it started playing up the slightly more, you know, sexy comedy adventure angle. But, I think it's been a book that's been well worth reading, and Amanda Connor's art is always the draw for anything she works on. But yeah. And with her on it, I just don't want to read it anymore after, without this creative team. So this is it for me and Power Girl, but it's a very nice way for the book to go out, I think.
So book will you think it'll last, or do you think we'll get to like 15 and then it's
not
done?
Selling gang, it's not selling gangbusters as it is.
Yeah.
It's when it's a cult hit, you know, and I would say that I know people are going to, I mean, it's not even a guess, like, it is a certifiable fact that people are going to leave that book in significant numbers when that creative team leaves. I will bet money on it.
Yeah, Amanda Connor was the only reason I bought the first issue, and I really liked it, and I wanted to come back, but I was kind of in the middle of, you know, dropping some stuff, and I was thinking, well, what do I want and what to read, and what can I do without, and that kind of made the list of what I can do without.
Well, I don't think it's long for this world, so.
That's sad.
Well, I mean, I'm not so bothered now because I'm not going to be reading it. It's the creative. Yeah, I'm kind of done with it. It's like, yeah, it's a pity. Power Girl is, this is another Martian Manhunter Namor situation. Like we were talking about before we started recording, she doesn't deserve a series of her own. She's never going to be able to support it. I think we can just count ourselves lucky that we got a good little series out of it by a strong creative team before it disappeared. And I am quite thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thor delivers a siege epilogue this week.
Really?
It's in which just the loose ends of Siege and some things from Straczynski's run are tied up. It finishes on a big action sequence as Thor pounds that crap out of his evil robot clone and just blows it to fragments. So that's done with.
Sweet.
We'll not be seeing that again.
Thank God.
Thor. Baldur come to terms, and Baldur realizes that he was wrong to exile him, and they're friends again. Everything's good. Volstagg continues to work hard to try to make up for everything that he was inadvertently responsible for during Siege. And fantastically as well, we also found out that Bill managed to go to Valhalla for saving everybody. The mortal lover of the goddess Kelda, who was the mortal hero of Straczynski's run and who died in Straczynski's final issue. It turns out he made it to Valhalla.
That's cool.
So he's living on, he's not living on, you know, but he's celebrating in death afterwards. Of course, I've never been entirely clear how Valhalla worked in relation to Asgard, because it is just a big old hall, just like sitting next to Asgard. But I see here, like, someone goes and gets Kelda and tells her she has to see this, and when she reaches out to it, she finds she can't go through. So I didn't know you couldn't go through to Valhalla. So, that's,
so it's an actual, like, a hall or something, Asgard, so you can look at it or something?
Yeah, it's just sitting there. It's just a big dining hall where everybody feasts and revels. But living can't cross over between it.
So Bill's probably watching some DVDs and drinking, like, some sodas or something, right?
He's sitting at a table there and asking any of the guys if they have the mayo.
What is this mayo you speak of? The famous mayo. An axe, if I recall. Dwarf crafted.
Sweet.
Never mind.
Because in the actual Valhalla, you would, like, go drink and eat a lot and then go kill each other and then
they probably
get resurrected and then...
They're certainly doing the first part.
Yeah.
So I think I thought that was a really...
killing each other is the fun part.
Well, maybe they do when they get bored, but they're eating right now anyway.
Oh.
But I just thought it was a really nice, sweet way to end that and show things turned out sort of. I mean, yeah, they can never be together, you know, but what she says here, you know, we found a way to make a bond between goddess and mortal man work. We will find a way to do this likewise. So I don't know if that means they can communicate with them, like just stand on either side of the force field that keeps the door and apart and, I don't know, you know, hold up notes or something, but I think it's nice and sweet. It's sweet to know that Bill survived and he's going to maybe have a little bit more of a lingering impact than it seemed like he did when he died. Not that he didn't die. Well, he died a hero. That's why he's wound up in Valhalla.
Yeah. Those Asgardians that were working with Loki killed him. That's how it happened, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then Thor smashes up his clone. And it's just looking at the two of them lunging at each other. It makes me realize how much I love Thor's newer Olivier Coipel design costume.
Yeah, I really like that costume.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're using something very, very similar to that in the movie. I think that looks cool in that photo that we got.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not too often, you know, that it's a very rare thing that a costume is redesigned, that the redesign sticks, you know. Usually these things do wind up getting reset to classic outfits. But I think there's legs on this new Thor costume because it's just pretty awesome. And
I'd be fine with it if they kept it.
It's not as legendary, but honestly, it's a superior costume. And I want to see it hang around, and I hope nobody just decides to reset it someday for no reason.
So is that issue of Thor, didn't you say like Matt Fraction might be coming on with Thor?
Well, this is the final issue of Kieran Gillen. The next issue is supposed to be Matt Fraction's first.
I need to get that issue.
I know, I'm looking forward to it as well. But the solicitations for the issue after that, and I believe the issue after that as well, have Gillen as the writer again. No, we could do a lot worse than Gillen as the writer of Thor, because I like Kieran Gillen.
Yeah, I was sort of waiting for the next creative team before I jumped back on, because I really miss getting Thor, but the stuff that followed JMS's stuff, I just wasn't feeling it for some reason, and I, again, needed a book to drop, so I was like, hey, JMS is done, maybe I'm done with Thor for now, and it kind of went to the wayside.
Well, I've really enjoyed Gillen's work on Thor. Not as much as Straczynski's, but it's funny. It's like I was just something that was occurring to me. I was just thinking about it yesterday casually, and Brian reminded me of it there when he said he'd read a lot of Jurgen's Thor. And I just realized Thor has been a book that has been consistently good since I started reading it in 1998.
That's awesome.
Because you had just the solid, straight run of Jurgen's Thor. Followed by Michael Avon Oeming's Ragnarok storyline.
Wasn't
around for like 3 or 4 years.
I liked the
Ragnarok stuff. I thought it was pretty good. Stuff. Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I thought it was really good.
The Jurgen stuff is fantastic. I mean, to follow on the heels of the Jurgen stuff is its only problem. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Because it does have to sit there and struggle. I mean, at the start of the thing, I was left genuinely puzzled by some of the things it was doing, because it was like Thor didn't have the Odin power anymore, and he was saying strange things. It didn't quite seem to match up. And as the story went on, they filled in the pieces, and it all made sense eventually. But yeah, I mean, Thor has been just a consistently... I never really thought about it until the other day, but that got to make Thor one of Marvel's most like consistently good books. Never perhaps mind-blowing, but just consistently quality.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to Fraction taking it over, because I think he'll do a really good job.
Yeah, maybe I'll pick it up the next issue. I really want to jump back into Thor. I've missed it.
I think you should.
I think I should, too.
Okay, last thing I'm going to talk about here. Read a couple of other things. Not going to talk about them. Last thing I read this week was Fantastic Four. And you're all probably tired of me gushing about Fantastic Four, but the first 5 pages of this issue were the best thing I read all week. And they were Reed Richards standing on a stage talking to people. So, you know, it's Reed. He's at a scientific conference, and he's closing it out. And he's just berating his colleagues for their backward thinking, all the backwards ideas that they've presented over the course of the, whatever you want to call it, the symposium, convention, whatever. You know, science's social responsibility, the necessity of suspension of manned space flights in a global recession, or the dream of an energy neutral life. Ideas to protect and extend man's... Reed distills it as ideas that symbolize their fear of tomorrow, ways to stagnate the race and keep themselves alive, to maintain the status quo all the longer. And Reed is like, you know, 1 billion, the optimum population of humanity, is the narrow vision of a dying man. Preserve everything, do whatever it takes to hang on a little longer. It's the speech of a coward. The future of man is not 1 billion of us fighting over limited resources on a soon-to-be-dead planet, but 1 trillion human beings spanning an entire galaxy. The future of man is not here. It is out there. Because it's our new horizon. Because it's what's next. Yes! 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 This, I mean, I got a little chills when I was reading this, honestly. It's like such a wonderful distillation of the the just the attitude of exploration and the attitude towards science and discovery that Reed Richards has. And it's this whole Imaginauts concept for the Fantastic Four that Mark Waid put a name to it on his run. And it's become the best writers have understood that about the Fantastic Four. That's not the way Miller approached it. Miller just threw as much crazy shit at the reader as he could as a big roller coaster ride. Treating it for them, it was an ordinary day. But Hickman's got the feel down. I think I've said this all before. I can't remember what I've said and what I haven't at this point. But Hickman's got the feel down of us on the journey with the Fantastic Four, discovering along with them, and that's just the way it should be. Honestly, I mean, this issue is a collection of like threads and subplots coming together as Sue helps broker peace with the old Atlanteans and. The various children that the Fantastic Four have taken in are performing. Artie and Leech are doing karate with Franklin, and Artie's able to use his holograms to help Valeria improve Dragon Man. And the Moloid children seem to know things. And the wizard's clone. Basically, and it all culminates in basically Reed is taken, he's brought all these children and is using them as his future foundation, where he's going to teach them. And together, they're going to take the next step. They are what is next. And he is going to guide them there. And that's just awesome, honestly. I've said it before. I'll not dwell on it, but I just can't say enough good things about Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four. I'm done.
Yeah, it's a great book. I agree.
So...
That leaves us with the main event,
Secret Avengers.
Yeah. Why is the Secret Avengers the main event? That's kind
of
weird.
It's really not deserving of the main event.
Yeah, well, that's why I said I wanted it to be the Avengers, and we'd save all the Avengers talk to the end, but somebody wasn't listening to me.
Yeah. Well,
so anyway,
I will say that Secret Avengers, I didn't hate it. In fact, I kind of liked it.
I agree.
I want to keep getting it, and despite what Kilby's going to say about it, I think it was a good book.
It wasn't awful. It was just boring.
I think it was lacking in exposition. I think it would be helpful for... Let's run it down. You know, this story involves Captain Valkyrie and the Black Widow being sent...
Valkyrie! There you go, Valkyrie. So
that's a good start. Going undercover to get close to a Roxxon operative. But when Valkyrie accidentally blows their cover, Steve just comes smashing in a window instead, and they steal the package that they were trying to get a hold of. And
he's with in the help that god-awful costume, too. I hate that costume.
Oh, come on, what's wrong with it? It's a blue suit with a star on the chest. It's not even a costume.
I miss his secret identity. He's never had a good one, but I still miss it.
Yeah.
The comic book artist is probably the best secret identity anyone's ever had.
Yeah. Yes, there's something a little meta about that.
Yeah, I love that.
He looks like Steve Rogers, agent of Secret Avengers. That's what he looks like. That's kind of my problem with it.
Well, he is that figure. That's
well,
who he
yeah,
is.
Yeah, he That's... is. I don't know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, they take the package to the Beast for analysis. So
yeah, the Beast. Plot. The Beast is in the Avengers.
They thought it was going to be the Serpent Crown, but it's not. It's something like the Serpent Crown. And that's wonder. You know, I get that. As somebody who reads comics, I get that. But it seems to be critically lacking in an actual explanation of what the Serpent Crown is. I know what the Serpent Crown is. I know why it has a connection to Roxxon. But this, I would rather doubt a lot of other people do, because I don't know when the last time the Serpent Crown was relevant is. What, like Atlantis Arise or something?
I don't
Atlantis
even
attacks.
I have no idea what it is. I just know that it's important. That's all.
Serpent Crown is a mind-controlling device crafted by the Elder God Set, forged by Lemurians, that's been passed down through the centuries, and will ultimately be the tool to bringing Set back to Earth. And Roxxon have had their hands on it more than once. But there's that explanation is just missing. And then anyway, Steve approaches. Steve, also on the team are Moon Knight and Ant-Man.
Now, is this the Ant-Man from Robert Kirkman's run?
That is, it's the Eric
O'Grady. That's awesome.
Man, that's awesome. That's right, it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And Moon Knight as well, who I've always liked Moon Knight, but I got to say, his series haven't thrilled me of late after, who was it, after Charlie Houston left the first Moon Knight series, I kind of lost the thread of it. But, and they're on the team, and who's the other guys on the team? Is there anybody else on the team?
Nova. Rocks,
but they find
Nova. Nova's right. On the team. I've got Nova's a man on Mars that can check that out for me. Yeah, Nova. They're
checking out Mars because after Moon Knight and Ant-Man discovered that Roxxon are digging on Mars.
Yeah.
So they've got Nova up there checking that out. And there are some mysterious forces at work up on Mars and another serpent crown-like object, which Nova seems to be reaching out to put on his noggin, which will lead to bad things.
Obviously.
And the issue culminates with the Avengers jetting off in a Quinjet for space, while Sharon, back on Earth, is ambushed by what appears to be Nick Fury.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know what's up with that. I'm intrigued. I'm looking forward to the next issue to find out.
Yeah, it was a good book. What's wrong with
it? It was a good comic. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I've said it before. I think this is the Avengers book to watch. It's got a rather classic-y Avengers light. See, this is where it contrasts with Bendis' stuff. When he was doing non-traditional Avengers stories, he was doing them with a non-traditional Avengers team. But here we have a fairly traditional Avengers team doing something traditionally Avengers-y, in a plot involving very traditionally Avengers-y elements, Serpent Crown, but in very non-traditionally Avengers-y trappings.
Exactly.
It's weird.
this
yes, concept is unusual. It's got an identity. And I think it's going to be the book to watch because it's unusual. It's hard to know what's going to happen, where it's going to go.
The issue.
I expected nothing from this comic except for that, hey, this apparently is the book that they want you to buy if you want to read stories about Steve Rogers, and walked away with, that was pretty cool, and I might start buying this book.
I thought, like I said before, I thought the art was kind of muddy. It's like, oh, this is kind of crappy ripoff Mike Diodati Jr. art. Lo and behold, it was Mike Diodati.
Well, it's very heavy on the shadow, but I don't think it's ever muddy. I mean, I think I can always distinguish.
I think the art's fine.
Yeah.
I think the art's fine.
I don't know, like Diodato's been getting progressively heavier and heavier on the shadows of late. I think it's his tenure on Dark Avengers and the need for darkness on that book, because maybe there's a lot of spotted blacks in this comic. But I mean, I don't think it obscures anything.
Diodato's not my favorite artist, really. I mean, if I'm going to pick my favorite artists of all time, he's not even going to probably make my top 20. But the art's fine. I mean, it works, and the story moves along just fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
I mean, he does a decent enough job of telling the story. Getting there, I mean, is not hard. It's just, it's not that.
Oh, and I don't think we mentioned it, but War Machine's also on that team. War Machine!
War Machine, that's right.
Did you? Yeah, he was. He was standing there talking.
War Machine was the guy who didn't actually get to do anything in this issue.
Yeah.
So he was standing there talking, so it's almost like a Bendis book.
So, but, like, issue two, War Machine's going to kill something. I predict.
Probably. What's on the cover of issue
the big
two?
Gun.
Mission to Mars.
I don't know what's going on there. They're in spacesuits.
Well, they're gone to Mars. You'll probably find Nova's put that serpent crown on his head.
Oh, God, so does Cap have the energy shield? Is that what that is? On the cover?
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Is it the energy shield?
Yeah, it is. I love that energy shield.
I'm buying this book.
Energy shield crap.
You know, it's like, I wish I could really attack you, Kilby, but it's like, I know you didn't know it was Brubaker when you started reading it, so I can't.
Yeah.
You didn't have a preconceived notion. You can just genuinely say you didn't enjoy it. But I like it whenever my opinions get validated like that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember if I, I can't remember if I told the story on the podcast or not. I remember one day I was bored and I picked up Essential Defenders volume whatever. And I was like, oh, right, yeah, Essential Defenders, thrilling stuff. I started flipping through it and I was like, actually, this is quite good. Who wrote this? Flip, flip, flip. Steve Gerber. I love Steve Gerber, so it's nice to get your opinion validated accidentally like that.
You know, the thing is, I rib on Brubaker. I haven't hated everything I've ever read that he's written. It's just that I think he's just a very predictable...
Well, you're one of those aberrant types, because I think I've said it before, is like it hasn't become cool to hate Brubaker yet.
I've hated him since he started, since he was writing Batman.
I hated his Batman, but I liked his Cap up until Steve died, and then I quit reading.
I was really colored by his run on Batman. Now his run on Gotham Central was okay because he had Greg Rucka,
Him
up, but his Batman was awful. I hated his Daredevil. It was awful.
I haven't read enough of his Daredevil to judge it, but the stuff on Cap with Red Skull early in the comic I thought was interesting. I thought that was kind of interesting way to do Red Skull.
That was one of those things I read all in one go, so it's not like I had time to build. I already knew all the surprises and everything going in, so my opinion was colored by that. It's like, oh, it's, you know, it's Bucky, great. I'm just sort of sitting through, and it's arduous sort of. God, I got to read another issue. So I ended up reading about 40 issues in the matter of a couple weeks. I had a huge stack of that book to read, and I just did not enjoy
it. Well, that could also probably not hurt, not help you a little bit. You know, if you're going to have to overload on it like that, you burn yourself out on it. Excuses.
Yeah, definitely not like reading the whole Dan Jurgens run in one sitting of Thor.
Oh, baby. All right. I don't know. I really enjoyed the first issue of that. So I'm looking forward to the next one. I think the Avengers books are off to a strong start. I'm just hoping New and Academy can carry it on.
Yeah, I think Academy is the book that I probably won't get, but I'm on the fence.
I think
about
Academy
Avengers.
Is the book you should get.
Now, who's writing it?
Christos Gage.
Why should I get it?
Because it's following on from Avengers the Initiative, and Avengers the Initiative was fantastic.
But I didn't read Avengers Initiative, so I don't need
you
to.
Don't need
so
to
there
have
we
read
go.
Of it. You don't need to have read of it. That's the thing, actually. It's something I didn't talk about there this week or last week, was that Initiative, Dark Avengers, and New Avengers all had their finale issues in the last week or two. And they were all genuinely good comics. Pardon me. Especially the Initiative, which even had a little bit of it wrapped up as many of the dangling threads as it could, like Tigra was pregnant with a Skrull baby, stuff like that. And it even did a little like post-credits rundown of what happened to everybody afterwards. It was a genuinely heartfelt book where, like, I'm just sad that means we basically don't have a Taskmaster, Constrictor, and Diamondback ongoing. Which is basically what the Initiative had turned into by the end there. But it was a consistently strong book, and I'm really looking forward to the Academy. The whole cast of the main cast of characters is new, but that's the way that Initiative worked anyway. Basically, it ran in year-long straights where the first year was one first 13 issues was the first year of cadets. They graduated, and another group of them came in, and then the Initiative all got turned upside down about a year later with a Secret Invasion.
So is it like a season, basically, like a have a season
like that. I mean,
with a cast of characters, and then the cast changes in the next season or something?
Well, after Secret Invasion, the whole thing got disbanded and reconstructed with Camp Hammer, with Osborn in charge instead. So the premise shifted a little bit from being about recruits to being about the guys who were in charge, like Taskmaster and Constrictor and Diamondback and the Hood. And they threaded subplots through it continuously with the other instructors. Justice had left the organization. Justice was one of the instructors as well, and he left with his fellow new warriors, and they started fighting Osborn as well. And because there were a team who were already anti-registration, and then Justice and Ultra Girl, who were instructors at the camp and who had registered, eventually turned and signed and joined up with them to fight Osborn's forces instead, stuff like that. So, the thing I always said about the Initiative was, as a book that was so intrinsically tied into what was happening in the larger Marvel Universe at the time, it was a book, and therefore always had to roll with whatever changes got thrown its way. It was expert at being able to make it seem like those changes had always been part of the plan. Hmm. While it had to undergo big changes, it always rolled with them to the extent that it didn't feel like the book was suffering for it. It never suffered for it. It always worked it perfectly into its ongoing narrative. Its Secret Invasion tie-in was the best tie-in there was for Secret Invasion. It was great. Because there was a Skrull on every Initiative team. So it was about Triathlon and the Skrull kill crew traveling around the country, visiting all the Initiative teams and rooting out the Skrulls. And now that the series has ended and the Initiative has been disbanded, so it can't exist anymore, which is why the series is ending. But the concept lives on, the idea of someone to help train young heroes who will want it. So I know we're still going to have Justice and I think Tigra as well and other characters who were instructors in this, teaching the new generation of heroes who want to be trained, and the new young characters, they're all new characters. And also, Speedball. He's not Penance anymore.
Well, that's good.
Wow. It is.
Yay.
So I strongly recommend everybody to check out Avengers The Academy. It is the little bastard redheaded stepchild of the line. It's true. It's the other book. It's the non-Bendis, non-Brubaker book that's just not about one of the big teams with any big name characters on it. But that's all the more reason for you to give it a chance, in my opinion. Check it out.
Excellent.
Good endorsement.
Hear that, okay. Listeners.
So, there we go. So that should be it for this week. Somehow we managed to get some legs out of that for this show.
It's anyway. A double-sized issue.
I know, it's huge. Well, we had been gone, and so, you know, it's good to kind of, you know, flesh it out a little bit. Give some.
Well, there's a good lot of good stuff is out now. A lot of good comics.
Yeah,
a lot of good
it's
stuff
a very good time.
It's a great time to start getting into comics, and I think that's.
There's a lot of new things have started that are very good.
Yeah.
Yes. So
we'll all be bitching about it in a few months' time. So
yes.
Oh yeah.
Enjoy it while it's here.
So it looks like we got good stuff for next week too. So that should be exciting. So anyway, gentlemen. Thank you again for joining us. Please go to our website, tfradio.net. You're going to find all of our shows there. That's going to include Radio Free Cybertron for Transformers. It's going to include Outside the Cage for wrestling. You're going to have Superhero Time, which they should have. I don't know if they've already covered it or will be covering it, but there's some big news coming out of that. So check that out. You've got New Soundwave, which is the show that we still do. And anyway, all kinds of good stuff. We do contests. There's all kinds of cool stuff. So go to the website, tfradio.net. Check it out. Going to find everything we've got there. So for myself and for everyone, thank you for joining us. And be sure to tune in next week when it will be Fanboy versus...
Bacon.
Bacon.
This has been Fanboy versus... with your hosts, J.D. Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.